What's up, world? I felt inspired watching that display of basketball excellence put on by the San Antonio Spurs. I felt inspired to do a quick little mini podcast just now. So we're going to recap the NBA Finals real quick. Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast. I'm your man, Jay Hicks. Back at it tonight, late on a Sunday evening. Just wanted to get these thoughts out there while they were fresh, and hopefully I can get them to you, by tomorrow. That's probably when this link will most likely be up on the site. You can hit the site up at hiphopsportsreport.com. Please contact us. There's an email us section on the site if you have any feedback about the website, about what we're doing here. Please hit us on Twitter as well, twitter.com/HHSReport. And then go on iTunes as well. If you haven't already, go out to iTunes. Check us out there. You can find all of our old podcasts there. Please feel free to rate and subscribe. We need some more ratings. We need some more subscriptions, of course. But I like to see some more comments, some feedback about what the podcast is, how the podcast is doing to this point. And we greatly appreciate that here on the Hip Hop Sports Report. Now, again, just got done watching Game 5 of the Finals. You all saw it, I'm sure. The Spurs completely took apart the Miami Heat in 5 games. That was a 5-game sweep. Y'all may have heard that expression from time to time. That was a 5-game sweep, y'all. That's exactly what that was. San Antonio won, and it was not close. Miami lost 4 games in this series out of 5. They won game 2 by a mere 2 points, and they needed a big shot from Chris Bosh out of the corner to get that W. Aside from that, they lost 4 games by, if my math is correct, a combined 72 points. That's a margin of victory of 18 a game, which I believe I heard was an NBA Finals record. First thing you have to do is take your hat off to the San Antonio Spurs for a fantastic season. They were the best team in the NBA from start to finish. They had the best record in the regular season, 62-63 win, something like that. They were the number one overall seed going into the playoffs. And then if you look at the run that they went through in a much more difficult conference, which we'll touch on that in a moment, but in a Western conference that was just absolutely loaded from top to bottom, you saw the Spurs go through the Dallas Mavericks, albeit in 7 games, which, looking back on it now, the Mavericks actually pushed the Spurs in 7 games, tells you how deep the West really was. I mean, imagine if Dallas was in the East, they could have easily wound up in the conference finals. You saw San Antonio defeat Dallas in 7 games. Second round, you saw San Antonio defeat Portland in, I believe, 5 games. But Portland, a very, very talented young team with a very well-balanced starting five and a decent bench, too. They're really doing some great things up in Portland. But, I mean, San Antonio ran through them, man. They cut through them like a hot knife through butter, you know? I mean, it wasn't close in that series either. Then when you go to Oklahoma City, the Spurs dispatched of the Thunder without too much difficulty. And just to put in perspective, I mean, the Thunder were a top 5 team all season. They went through Dallas, Portland, and Oklahoma City to get to the finals. They were the best team from start to finish. San Antonio, you have to really applaud them. I'm going to take this opportunity to do this. That's the sound of me patting myself on the back, y'all. Because I had the San Antonio Spurs winning the NBA championship at the beginning of the season. And I gotta say, I'm on a nice little run here. Last season, I predicted the Miami Heat to win the NBA Finals before the season started. Then in the playoffs, then going into the finals, I had them beating San Antonio in 7 games. I predicted each of the 7 games correctly, and Miami won in 7, and I had that before the series started. And I had Miami winning the whole thing from jump. You go to the football season, I had the Seattle Seahawks winning the Super Bowl from the beginning of the season. They went ahead and I had them defeating the San Francisco 49ers at home to advance to the Super Bowl. They did that, and then they went on and they won the Super Bowl. Then this basketball season comes up, I had the San Antonio Spurs going all the way from this beginning of the season. I'm just saying, y'all, Just let me have this moment. Let me have this, okay? I'm on a roll right now. Who wants to go to Vegas? You know what I'm saying? I got people in Vegas. We can go out there, we have a good time, you know what I'm saying? I'm your good luck charm, I don't know. I even had Cotto over Martinez last week, I'm just saying. But yeah, I just had to get that out the way. Spurs, again, they deserve all the credit in the world. As just organizationally from top to bottom, they are what your favorite sports team should strive to be like. That's really what they are. I mean, from our good friend and frequent guest of the podcast, and friend of the podcast, Anthony Houston, last week, we had him on, and he mentioned the synergy that it's a, I think it's a term that he's kind of coined at this point when he's speaking of in a sports context, specifically about owner, general manager, coach, star player. The synergy. Peter Holt, R.C. Buford, Greg Popovich, Tim Duncan. That's the core four there in San Antonio. And they are just unbelievable. And that group of guys has been largely responsible for all five of these championships that San Antonio has now won in the last 15 years. So, and they went to the finals one other time, I think, and lost, which was last year. So that's six finals appearances, five championships in 15 years. That's a pretty damn good run. I don't think anybody would I don't think anybody would turn that down over the course of a decade and a half. Runs don't get much better than that. And it starts with the top with the owner, Peter Holt. It starts with R.C. Buford, the general manager, who, you know, the amazing thing about R.C. Buford is that he never picks in the top 10. You know, he doesn't pick in the top 10. He picks in the 20s and 30s. Every year, because the Spurs are winning 50 games every single season. So he doesn't have a lottery pick. He had one lottery pick. It was Tim Duncan. And I don't even know if he was there when he made that selection, but that's not the point. The point is that San Antonio is so consistently good that they can't just build their team around some young kid that was a top five pick and they can just say this is the focal point of the franchise. Tim Duncan was their one guy, but every subsequent year after that, they've added pieces in different places. Tony Parker was a second round pick. Manu Ginobili was a second round pick. They brought in a slew of international players. They've even drafted international players that turned out to be really great NBA players like Goran Dragic and Luis Scola that don't even play for them anymore. And then you have things like the deal that R.C. Buford made on draft night in 2011 when he ended up picking or obtaining, I should say, Kawhi Leonard, who was picked 15th overall by the Indiana Pacers. The Pacers traded away Kawhi Leonard in order to obtain George Hill. And if you watch the playoffs this year, you know how terrible George Hill was. I'm not saying George Hill is a terrible player because he actually looked really good when he played for the Spurs. And then I guess that's for the Spurs brass to decide, because everybody that seems to put on a Spurs jersey looks pretty good. So yeah, I guess that's part of the hard part of R.C. Buford's job, is he has to differentiate between who's good in our system and is profiting off the system, or who's actually a really good player. George Hill left and went to Indiana. He's been so-so at times, but he seems to have nosedived of late. Meanwhile, Kawhi Leonard is blossoming into this young superstar. He looks like he's one of the better two-way players in the NBA right now. If you look at the way he defended LeBron James from the beginning of the series, I mean, he was getting in foul trouble in the first two games, but San Antonio still managed to split those first two. And then ever since then, Kawhi Leonard's been a man possessed. I mean, guarding LeBron with intensity. He's picking him up, not full court, but he's picking him up with a great aggression. He's getting into his chest. He's getting into his shirt. Every shot is contested. He's got his gigantic hands in his face at all times. And then you see Kawhi on the other end. He's doing the catch and shoot jumper thing, the old Bruce Bowen routine out of the corner. He's making those. He's going to the rim a few times a game. He's throwing it down a few times a game. He's just been sensational this entire series, and he was rewarded, and correctly so, I might add, with the Finals MVP trophy, with the Bill Russell trophy. He earned it. He was the best player for the Spurs in this series, and Kawhi Leonard was a well-deserved MVP. But going back to draft night 2011, San Antonio traded for Kawhi Leonard, who was the 15th pick. The Spurs gave up George Hill. Indiana sent back Kawhi Leonard and an extra pick. So if you can believe that, R.C. Buford, not only did he get Kawhi Leonard, who was a Finals MVP not 10 years down the road, but 3 years later, he's a Finals MVP, and they got an extra ball player in return. Some dude named Davis Bertans. Know the name, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing it, but know that name, because Davis Bertans is from Latvia. Knowing the Spurs, he's going to wind up being a three-time All-Star in about 6 years. You know what I'm saying? Because he's just, that's just what the Spurs do. They just go to any corner of the earth and they bring these guys in and they flourish in San Antonio. It's amazing. But I think Kawhi Leonard, I always thought he was going to be a good player. I mean, I liked him in college, but I never thought he'd be this good, to be quite honest. He was picked 15th, which I thought was about right for him in that draft. But looking back on it, you had guys like Alec Burks and Derek Williams and Tristan Thompson and a lot of other ball players that didn't wind up doing much of anything to this point in their careers picked ahead of them. And it's just looking back on it. I mean, the only other really notable players to come out that year off the top of my head were Kyrie Irving and Klay Thompson. I think were drafted. Kyrie was first, and then Klay Thompson was drafted around 9th or something like that. And then you have Kawhi Leonard at 15. I mean, I think you have the Markieff and Marcus Morris were in there. But I mean, Finals MVP. You know what I'm saying? I mean, what it speaks for itself. Kawhi Leonard is legit, and he does it on both ends of the floor. And he's quiet, which fits right into the Spurs mantra, if you will. I think that Kawhi Leonard would have been a good player anywhere, but I think he fell into the perfect situation. And I think it's apropos because Tim Duncan, I felt, was a great college player, obviously, at Wake Forest and was the number one overall pick back in, I think, 1997. But Duncan fell into a perfect situation in San Antonio, too. There was always a debate about whether or not he was better than Kevin Garnett. I was always a KG guy, personally. And all the years I was coming up, I'm like, Kevin Garnett's way better than Tim Duncan. Now, Kevin Garnett is not way better than Tim Duncan. And most people would probably say that Tim Duncan is a better basketball player, or that he will go down as a better basketball player. I would say that certainly Tim Duncan is going to go down with a more accomplished career than Kevin Garnett. But just as far as the eyeball test goes, I mean, those guys are pretty close to equals. If not, KG might be a little bit better. But if you look at all the years that KG was carrying around those garbage bags he called teammates, you know what I'm saying, in Minnesota, who knows? If you swap Kevin Garnett with Tim Duncan on draft night 1997, like, say Minnesota called up San Antonio and said, we'll give you Kevin Garnett for the number one pick in the draft, which was Tim Duncan, and they traded places, and Tim Duncan started his career in Minnesota in 97 and KG started in San Antonio, are we sure that Kevin Garnett wouldn't have multiple championships? And are we sure that Tim Duncan would have any? I don't know. I think it's something that's worth noting. But and that's not to slight Tim Duncan. It sounds like I'm taking shots at him, and I'm really not. I'm just pointing out the fact that everything's fallen into place so perfectly in San Antonio. And Tim Duncan's personality is such that it really was able to... it really permeated that entire franchise and that organization. So maybe KG wouldn't have worked out in San Antonio. I don't know. But we know that Tim Duncan did. I mean, KG's a lot more of a fiery personality. Tim Duncan's way more low-key. But Duncan worked out, and now here we are 15 years and 5 championships later. You have to put him in the class as far as one of the all-time greats. I mean, and we already were doing that with Tim Duncan. I mean, he was already up there. It's just when I think of Greg Popovich and how amazing of a basketball coach he is, and the fact that he's been able to work with Tim Duncan basically since day one in San Antonio, I just think things worked out really well for all parties involved. Duncan, for Pop, for the Spurs organization, it was just a perfect fit on every level. And Tim Duncan had a chance to leave. That's the other thing. Like, if you remember back in, I think it was 2000, 2001, he had already won San Antonio a championship in 99. And he was a free agent. He was going to cash in on his first big contract, Duncan was. And he was already one of the top, you know, 3 or 4 players in the league. And he had a chance to leave, and he had a chance to go to the Orlando Magic. And it was Orlando who at that time had these aspirations of putting together this super team. Before anybody had really done it, put together a super team through free agency before, Orlando laid the blueprint down. They were going to get Tim Duncan and Grant Hill and pair them together and win 10 straight championships. That was the thinking, right? Well, Grant Hill went. He left Detroit, went to Orlando. Tim Duncan stayed. He was loyal to San Antonio. He stayed there. Turned out that was the right decision. Orlando has to settle, and I'm doing air quotes for settle, for Tracy McGrady, and it was going to be McGrady and Grant Hill together. Well, Grant Hill's body breaks down, and now it's Tracy McGrady and nothing in Orlando, and he's carrying around that franchise for 7 years or whatever it was. And so it's just amazing how Tim Duncan had a chance to bounce and he just chose not to bounce. He was like, you know what, I think I'm gonna stay here. I like what they're doing here. And it worked out. And now, looking back on it, we're able to recognize him as the great player that he is, not only for just his own individual accomplishments, but also for the fact that he didn't bail on his franchise when he had the opportunity to. Which brings me to LeBron James. Okay? LeBron, he took a different route. LeBron bailed on his team. You know, he took a team to the championship round, but they didn't win it. And he bailed. But, you know, I'm sure LeBron was comfortable with that decision because he is a two-time champion today. And I know a lot of people are going to crush LeBron James on Twitter. He's already getting crushed as I speak right now on this podcast. He's already getting annihilated on Twitter and on Instagram and everything else. They got the pictures in. When I saw LeBron put his head and his hands on the bench in the fourth quarter, I'm like, I turned to my lady and I'm like, there's no way he can be doing this right now, because that's meme city right there. He's going to get crushed off of that meme alone. Just the image of him with his head in his hands just looking distraught and out of answers for the San Antonio Spurs team. But I'll tell you what, LeBron James averaged 28 points per game in the series. LeBron James had a double-double in game 5 just now. I believe he had 31 points and 10 rebounds and about 5 assists. I believe I heard this correctly, the rest of the Heat starters had 32 points and he had 31 or something like that. If you're LeBron James, what are you thinking right now? We said here on this very podcast back a few weeks ago when we did the Cleveland Show edition with Mark Hicks, Vince Hicks, and Royce Brantley. This is at the end of May. Go back and listen to it. But we talked about how LeBron was getting no help from the rest of his teammates. None. And they were able to skate by when they were in the Eastern Conference and they didn't have any real challenge. And this finals, if nothing else, is an indictment on the Eastern Conference. This just goes to show you how weak the East really was. And I said that on Twitter, that the Heat were going to experience a little bit of shell shock when they went up against an actual good basketball team for a change. You know, their biggest competition was the flighty Indiana Pacers. That was their stiffest competition in the East, really? Like, think about how dysfunctional the Pacers were down the stretch. That was the best team that we had to send up against Miami. And when I say we, I just mean we in general, not we as in, like, whatever. But that was the best team that could have been sent up against Miami at that time, was the Indiana Pacers, really? I mean, the Pacers have been falling apart for 2 months, ever since the All-Star break, and that was the best team that the East had to put up against Miami. Now here they are in the NBA Finals, and they look like they don't know what hit them, because they're going up against a team that had to go through Dallas and Portland and Oklahoma City. And that was part of the reason why I picked the Spurs to win the series. I was going to stick with the pick anyways because I had it from jump. But, you know what I mean, the Spurs, they've beaten legitimate basketball teams. Miami hadn't played anybody. Who did they play? You know? You're not going to be Boise State and just beat up on these bum teams in a bum conference and then go into the bowl game and then think you're going to run up against Alabama and win a national championship. No, it doesn't happen that way. You got to prepare yourself. You have to be tested in order to get to that point. Indiana was a better team last year, and they pushed Miami to, I believe, 7 games in the conference finals. That Miami team was more battle tested and therefore more prepared to go up against the San Antonio in the NBA Finals. But they weren't ready for this. San Antonio went through them like a buzzsaw because they weren't prepared. They had no preparation, and they were skating by, you know, off this false sense of security by beating up on all these bum teams in the East. And then you have Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh, who never really were contributing the way that they should have. Never really got, you know, good footing in this final series. It's funny, is I used to always tweet, but people who've been following me for a long time know that one of my favorite tweets to send out is LeBron James and Dwayne Wade play on the same team. That was like the funniest thing to me, because it simplified down how amazing it was that we were actually seeing these two great stars playing with one another as of 2010. And just watching them on the court together and just watching them run guys off the court for so many games and for so many years now, it was just impressive, right? Well, that tweet was only cool and funny, to me anyway, when Dwayne Wade was also balling, you know what I mean? But when Dwayne Wade falls off, that tweet became less and less frequent. And I don't remember the last time I sent it out now. Dwayne Wade in the NBA Finals averaged 15.2 points on 43.8% shooting, 2.6 assists, and 3.6 turnovers per game. His assist to turnover ratio was ridiculous. He was averaging more turnovers and assists in the series. And they actually started him at point guard tonight because Mario Chalmers was so garbage, Spoelstra couldn't even run him out there again. Wade actually shot well for the first few games in the series, but he tailed off down the stretch, which was, you know, unfortunate for Miami, obviously. But as I said on the podcast before, Dwayne Wade needed to be dropping 30 in multiple games this series. And this is what they rested him for all year. He sat out a third of the season, right? He should be rested, right? Well, no. The most he think he scored was 22, I believe, in this series, and he only averaged 15 a game. Like, 15 a game is nothing. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of people are going to talk about, you know, where LeBron's going to go next year and whether or not he might go to Cleveland or something like that. And I'll touch on that momentarily, but for perspective's sake, like, Deion Waiters averaged 15 points a game. You know what I'm saying? Like, Dwayne Wade was a shell of himself. And you know this when you look at his free throw attempts specifically. Wade averaged 5.2 free throw attempts per game in this series. I think he had two free throws in this game 5 loss. Two free throws attempted. He wasn't attacking the basket. As a matter of fact, nobody on Miami was attacking the basket. And that includes LeBron, because LeBron was only averaging about 5.5 free throws a game in this series. But Dwayne Wade was known for slashing, getting to the rim, drawing contact, and getting to that foul line. That was his bread and butter. That's how he, you know, averaged 25 points a game all these years. He's not that guy anymore. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just his knees can't do it anymore. Like I said, it's a very nondescript injury with Wade with regards to his knees. We don't really know how injured he is. I don't know how long he has to wrap up his knees. If he looked like Patrick Ewing in a locker room, like, you know what I'm saying, Patrick Ewing used to look when he used to have these giant ice packs on his knees during and after every game. Maybe Wade's looking like that and we just don't see it. I don't know. But whatever the case is, he was not himself, because he's not going to the line, drawing contact, stopping the clock, scoring with the clock stopped, and getting those free throws off, and therefore getting his mid-range game going. He never got into that kind of rhythm. Chris Bosh, the other member of the Big Three, 14 points a game in the finals. He actually shot 55%, just a shade under 55% for the series. But here's my beef with Chris Bosh. Number one, he only averaged 2.2 free throw attempts per game. So you're telling me between Bosh and Wade combined, they couldn't average 8 free throws a game? They were averaging less than 7.5 free throws between the two of them each game in the finals. That's ridiculous. You can't win like that. That just goes to show you that you're settling for jumpers. And jumpers isn't going to get you very far. I mean, it might get you to the finals, but it ain't going to get you to the mountaintop. So that's the one thing with Chris Bosh. The other thing was, he only averaged 5.2 rebounds per game. And I said that on the last podcast last week. Chris Bosh, he's floating around at the three-point line. He got so accustomed to shooting those three-point jumpers that he just completely was oblivious to anything happening in the paint. And that includes defense. But there was no rebounding whatsoever from Chris Bosh. So he had multiple games with 3 rebounds, 4 rebounds. It's like, dude, you're 6'11". You have to help your team. He's the only guy. Him and Birdman are the only guys on the team that are 6'10 and above that can actually contribute to something that's going on in the paint on the team. You know, they don't have one other legitimate big man besides Chris Bosh. And Birdman is limited because of his offensive deficiencies, so you can only play him for so many minutes. Chris Bosh has a lot of responsibility on him as the legitimate big man on this team at 6'11", and yet he'd rather shoot three-pointers all night. Dirk Nowitzki would go get you 10 rebounds, you know what I'm saying? Chris Bosh, the fact that Wade and Bosh were no-shows in this series is as big of a reason as why Miami lost as any. And that's not taking away anything from the Spurs, because the Spurs were obviously better teams. The better team, if you look at the shots that the Spurs are getting, they were shooting open shots in every game, you know? They were shooting open jumpers. Every jumper it seemed like San Antonio took was wide open. Meanwhile, Miami's taking contested stuff. But beyond that, when you look at why Miami lost on their end, Wade and Bosh didn't play well. They didn't play well enough. And Wade was shooting a decent percentage early on. Bosh shot a decent percentage the entire time. It makes you wonder, why wasn't Miami going to them more so? I don't know. Was it on LeBron? Maybe LeBron wasn't getting in the ball in the right spots. Maybe Spoelstra, his strategy wasn't really, you know, really working in a sense that they couldn't get Bosh and Wade involved in the ways that they were looking to get him involved in. I'm not really sure what happened, but they weren't taking enough shots, and beyond that, they were not nearly aggressive enough with regards to going to the basket. And that's why Miami is crying in the car right now. LeBron James is not the reason why the Miami Heat lost the series. I have no dog in a LeBron fight. You know what I'm saying? I'm from Cleveland, okay? LeBron played my team. He did. But that's not going to blind me to his accomplishments and his game on the court. LeBron averaged 28 points a game in the finals. That's pretty damn good. That's good enough to win in most circumstances. He was just on a team that wasn't as good as the Spurs. The Spurs were the better team. And that's why they won. LeBron can't do it on his own, but that's what he was forced to do because Norris Cole didn't show up, Mario Chalmers didn't show up, Wade and Bosh were a disappointment, Ray Allen was hit and miss, Rashard Lewis was hit and miss, Birdman was spotty at best, Haslam didn't play, Battier didn't do anything in the five games. Who was helping LeBron out? Nobody. So it's funny now to sit back and hear just, you know, Twitter just crush LeBron. And you know, social media just all over this dude. And like I said, I have no reason to support LeBron at this point. And this, I lost a lot of respect for him when he left Cleveland the way he did. But I never questioned his game. That was never in question. He averaged 28 points a game in these finals, going up against a superior team that knew that he was the only guy that they had to stop. And he still was balling out. He was the main reason, the Bosh jumper notwithstanding, that they won the one game that they did win. You know, and you could say whatever you want about the cramps and whatnot. I don't care about any of that. LeBron James is a phenomenal basketball player. But now all you're hearing is people say, oh, well, he's not Kobe. Please say that LeBron will never be Kobe. Like, this ends the discussion because LeBron lost in the finals again. Well, LeBron's lost in the finals 3 times. Since when is getting to the finals and losing a bad thing? Like, I just feel like our society, we don't understand that only one team can win a championship per year, y'all. Like, people don't really get that. Only one team wins it. So, everybody that doesn't win it is not the worst player in the league. Like, LeBron, he's been to it 5 times. You know how many players would kill to get to the finals 5 times? I grew up idolizing Charles Barkley. He only made the finals once. Karl Malone Stockton, they only made it twice. Patrick Ewing made it once. These are all-time great, great players. You don't get there that often, you know? Kobe Bryant, he's gone to the finals a bunch of times. Kobe Bryant also played with Shaq in his prime. Kobe Bryant also played with Pau Gasol. Kobe Bryant also had Phil Jackson on the sideline. So I'm not trying to knock Kobe. I'm just saying, like, people act like you can't compare LeBron to Kobe. Really? Why? Because LeBron took his team to the finals again for the 5th time in 10 years. So half the time he's been in the NBA, he's been in the finals. So we're going to kill LeBron for that? I don't understand that. LeBron is great. I mean, you know, you can dislike him for a lot of reasons or whatever. You can not respect him. You might have lost respect for him for the way he treated Cleveland and the way he left and handled that whole thing. A lot of people think he's arrogant, whatever. You can't question him on the court. If you do, you're just a moron or you're just not paying attention to basketball. You don't know anything about basketball. That's just the bottom line. You know what I mean? And again, I have no reason to defend him at this point, but it's just the honest to goodness truth. He was doing everything he could out there. He was chased down blocks, throwing Patty Mills stuff in the third row. Like, what else does he have to do before he gets people's approval? He's got to go 6 for 6 like Michael Jordan did before people start to consider him great. Well, guess what? Michael Jordan got his ass kicked in the playoffs plenty of times before he won his first championship. And he lost in the playoffs with Orlando, to be real. You know what I mean? Yeah, he just came off the baseball tip. But he came back. He played in the playoffs. He was on a great team. Did he win? No, he got bounced out by Shaq and Penny. You know, it's not like Michael Jordan is undefeated all the time. People act like because he's 6 for 6 that therefore he can't be touched. It's the same thing in football when people talk about Tom Brady. People want to clown Tom Brady now because he lost a couple of Super Bowls. Really? What's wrong with going to 5 Super Bowls? Like, because Joe Montana went to 4 and won all of them, he somehow leaps and bounds ahead of Tom Brady. Tom Brady's been to more Super Bowls than Joe Montana has. Just because Joe Montana... So you're telling me that it's better to not go there at all than to get to the top and lose? That doesn't make any sense. But that's what people are crushing LeBron for right now, and I just don't understand that. We can compare LeBron James to Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan. I watched Michael Jordan. I lived through Michael Jordan at his peak. I watched him at the peak of his powers. I came up in that era. You know what I'm saying? Michael Jordan, as great as he was, on a game-to-game basis, LeBron James is on par with Michael Jordan, y'all. I'm here to tell you that. Now, you can take away from it because Jordan stayed with his franchise and he built that team up from the ground up, and LeBron bailed on his team, and all, you know, fine. I'm not here to dispute any of that. I'm just talking about as far as on the basketball court. LeBron is as good as a defender. He has more range than Michael Jordan did. He's a better passer. He's a better rebounder. He's bigger. He's stronger. He's faster. He's got at least as high of a basketball IQ as Mike had. I mean, he's on par. He's in the discussion. Just because he lost to San Antonio doesn't mean that he's out of the discussion with Michael Jordan, and he's out of the discussion with Kobe Bryant, who, by the way, Kobe Bryant's also lost 2 times in the NBA Finals, and he shot like 40% for his career in the Finals. He's been there like 7 or 8, 9 times. I don't know how many times Kobe's been there, but he played with great teammates. He had a great coach, and even though he's won it 5 times, he shot terribly over the course of his Finals career, but everybody ignores that. It's just weird how y'all tend to judge these players, man. I guess the big thing I want to, my big takeaway from this final series was that San Antonio, again, you have to applaud them as an organization, but from a big picture standpoint, you can't look at the NBA, you can't look at sports, team sports in America, and think that you have to just run to free agency to build up your team, and that's the only way it can be done. Now, if you have the capacity to draw free agents, if you're in a city like Miami, New York, Los Angeles, Houston to a lesser extent, yeah, you can go that route and you can try doing that stuff. But you don't have to build your team that way. The Seattle Seahawks proved that in the NFL. You didn't see Seattle running out and splurging on free agents like the Redskins do every year and it not working out. No, Seattle, John Schneider, those guys, they got a great coach in Pete Carroll, and they built the team up through the draft. And they got a solid quarterback, and they made a bunch of smart picks on defense. The only free agent they went out and got was Percy Harvin, really. And they made some lesser-known moves, like they signed Cliff Averill and stuff like that. But basically, that was it. And they built a champion out of that team in Seattle. And you see San Antonio, they did the same thing. They built through the draft. They go to all corners of the earth. No stone is unturned. And they bring in these guys, and they fit in their system, and it works. And they win consistently every single year. And just look at the run the Spurs have been on the last 3 years. 2012, they won 20 games in a row going into the conference finals. They won 10 games to end the regular season. They won the first 10 games of the playoffs. They were up 2-0 on Oklahoma City. And miraculously, the Thunder ripped off 4 games in a row on them. But they could have been the best team in the league 2 years ago. Last year, the Spurs were 5 seconds away from a title. They should have won the title. But it just didn't happen. They got an unlucky bounce of the ball. Ray Allen hits the shot. We go to Game 7, and they barely lose Game 7 in Miami. The point is that San Antonio, believe it or not, is really, really close to have been 3-time NBA champions right now. We're talking about Miami having a three-peat. San Antonio could have had a three-peat very easily right now. But it's that consistent, sustained success that they've created by building through the draft and making smart decisions with regards to free agency, trades, and through the draft. That's what it boils down to. So my advice to any major sports franchise out there, stop worrying about cap space, stop worrying about free agency, and get better at drafting. Invest your resources in getting the right talent evaluators in place so you can make smart draft selections and frugal decisions with regards to trading and free agency. Though that's your best bet. Because most teams, unless you're like in a city like Houston, LA, New York, you're not going to be able to attract free agents. Miami can, you know what I'm saying? Those are the kind of cities that can attract the free agents. But by and large, most cities aren't going to be able to do that. And that's why that's your best way to win a championship. I mean, it's the best way to have consistent, sustained success is building up through the draft. And that's what these great teams have done. Because you look at, you know, look at teams like the Lakers. They chased Dwight Howard, right? Like last year, I don't even think they made the playoffs. And then Houston chased Dwight Howard. They got him, and they didn't even get out of the first round. So if you're a team, you don't need to be beating down Carmelo Anthony's door trying to get him to sign with your squad because you think that's going to put you over the top. It don't work like that. Believe in yourself. Believe in your own organization. You don't have to go reach for these guys from the outside. You don't have to do that. Look at how many retreads are on San Antonio's team. Patty Mills, Danny Green. These guys were cast off from other teams. And they come in here and they succeed. One lottery pick the Spurs had. Tim Duncan. That was it. One lottery pick. When you look at the roster of the Miami Heat, they had, you got Haslam and Norris Cole and Chalmers and Battier and Birdman. And these guys weren't winning anything for you. At least not this year. I mean, they won it last year, obviously, and they came close this year. But when you look at the outcome of the finals, maybe they weren't so close this year. And you have Wade and Bosh, and Wade and Bosh aren't even Wade and Bosh anymore. They're just Wade and Bosh. They're not these great free agent acquisitions anymore. These guys are 15 point per game ball players. Chris Bosh is a 6'11 center who averages 15 points and 5 rebounds. You know how many guys in the NBA do that? Dwayne Wade is a 2 guard that averages 15 points a game and more turnovers than assists in the finals. A lot of guys could do that. And you don't have to pay him 15 to 20 million a year either. And how would you even rate this Big Three experiment down in Miami? That's another weird thing. Like, I told you that they were going to be the first team in almost 50 years to go to 4 straight titles and win 3 in a row in the process, and I didn't think that that was too likely just based off the eye test. Like, this team did not look to be that good, and it turns out they weren't. And LeBron got what he wanted, and Bosh and Wade, they got what they wanted. They got 2 championships out the deal, but if you look at it over 4 years, they were talking about winning not 2, 3, not 4, not 5, or whatever. They went to the finals 4 straight years, but they got a lot of luck along the way. They went up against a lot of bum teams in the East, and they got 2 titles to show for it and 2 L's in the finals to show for it. Does that make it a success? I mean, maybe. I mean, getting to 4 straight finals is a wonderful accomplishment, but 2 out of 4 is not great, especially when you have the best player in the league on your team. And when you consider their aspirations for championship or bust, they went bust twice, so, you know, 50%, that's an F, right? So, to bring it full circle, LeBron James has a lot of decisions on his plate this year. Realistically, the only city or franchise that I could see him leaving Miami for is Cleveland. And I think it's because deep down in his heart, he doesn't feel right about the way he left things there. And I feel like deep down, he wants to make it right and he wants to go back there and he wants to live in Akron again. I think that's really what he wants to do. Just my personal opinion. But when you look at the rosters, the roster was the big thing that drew LeBron to Miami in the first place. And now the roster has failed him. And Pat Riley has failed him. Because the only moves that he made was acquiring Michael Beasley and Greg Oden and Rashard Lewis. Like, come on. Or, you know, that's not going to cut it. So, if you're looking at the rosters, you know, say what you will about the Cavaliers organization at the top or whatever. I'm not, you know, talking about that. I'm just looking at the rosters, y'all. Kyrie Irving, Deion Waiters, Anderson Varejao, Tristan Thompson. I mean, would you rather play with that for the next 5 years? Or would you rather play with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh and Norris Cole and, you know, Udonis Haslem because he's never leaving Miami ever? Like, I mean, seriously, I mean, think about that. If you're LeBron, these are the questions you have to ask yourself. Do you want to drag this team around again? You want to drag around Dwayne Wade again when he plays 2/3 of the season, sits out, you know, 1/3 of the season, and then when the lights are on, he still doesn't come to play? I don't know, man. That's a hard decision, man. Kyrie Irving was the All-Star MVP this year. Deion Waiters averaged like 16, 17 a game this year. He could be averaging 20 in the league next year. Andy Varejao is still a very good rebounder and defender, even though he's over 30 now. I'm just saying, and you got, like I said, Tristan Thompson's a decent rotation player. You get a halfway decent coach in there in Cleveland. Oh, did I forget to mention they have the number one pick in the draft? They have the number one pick in the draft. Maybe you could flip that for another All-Star caliber piece. Or maybe you sit back and you draft Jabari Parker or Andrew Wiggins, who, with each of those guys, I can't see a scenario where either of those guys aren't an All-Star in the next 5 years. And then Joel Embiid, you know, he's a little bit of a question mark, but he could work out in the same way. So, LeBron, I'm just saying, you got some things you got to look at, man. You got to weigh it all out. But this Miami Heat team, based on what I saw, and knowing that they have limited cap flexibility going forward, and they're still the oldest team in the NBA right now, I don't see a whole lot of reason to stay basketball-wise. But what do I know? I'm just a podcast host. Thank you all for listening to this short version of the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast. Check us out on Twitter at HHS Report. HipHopSportsReport.com is the website. And please search us out on iTunes. Search HipHopSportsReport.com. Find a podcast. Subscribe to it. Give us a nice rating. Give us some feedback. Give us some comments. Even if it's negative, I'm here to take it all on, baby. I'm listening to it. I'll take it all with a grain of salt, you know what I mean? And I'm here to take criticism and the love. It's all good. I enjoy the NBA season, but we still have the draft coming up. Hopefully, we'll get Mark Hicks back for another mock draft for the NBA this time around, because we really enjoyed the one in April. So that'll be on the docket, hopefully, within the next week or so. Thank y'all for listening. And we out of here. One. Six-figure niggas in them V12s. Big 12, what's up? No 10 niggas, so you see well. My Cuban lane, that's 14K. My presidential, I wear it every day. It symbolizes how I'm enterprising. I came from Linton Dickey pocket, so I emphasize it. You check the file and niggas say I kept it silent. But fuck the rumors, money talks and you made less deposits. Johnson video, you should go check the comments. They love me all around the world, my nigga, what's your problem? Turn off the lights, turn up my mic. Roll up some flights, let's all get right. It's that shit you waited for your whole fucking life. It's that shit you waited for your whole fucking life. All my liquor from France, my cars from Frankfurt. Told them keep they advance, distribute and market my label. I'm at the porch line asking, do they come in coats? Walking out the club with 100 goons. Magnum bottles to the fool and a pungent fume. Model bitches stunting in them fucking shows. Bring your home girl cause she coming toast. Fast cars with them leather seats. Drop top, she a fucking freak. Blow me down while we ride on PCH. That pussy the great, middle fingers in your face. Turn off the lights, turn up my mic. Roll up some flights, let's all get right. It's that shit you waited for your whole fucking life. It's that shit you waited for your whole fucking life. I'm in for stars, I just came home. My flow is sick, disinfect the microphone. In 08, we told you we was never gone. Change and we still on this marathon. Lightweight set back for a heavy arm. Now I'm jumping on stage with my jury froze. Fresh out, spend the money, killed the movie roll. It's all money in like a Brinks truck. And it's no money out like a prenup. You need to get your green up. Cause me and my team up. Light up some flights, lace up my nights. Victory laps, tonight is the night. This shit I waited for my whole fucking life. This the shit I waited for my whole fucking life. Stop. Turn off the lights. Turn up my mic. Roll up some flights. Let's all get right. It's that shit you waited for your whole fucking life. It's that shit you waited for your whole fucking life. Turn off the lights. Turn up my mic. Roll up some flights. Let's all get right. It's that shit you waited for your whole fucking life. It's that shit you waited for your whole fucking life.
Type music that bang in the jungle. Like that. You know something, you ain't here in the 40s. VL. Feel made for the dunk gang.
TFC though.
Shout to the bottoms. Crenshaw. Crenshaw. Lip Hustle.
Fuck the middleman, proud to pay, highhustle.com, victory lap coming soon, nigga.